Hi, Jessica Tovar. Welcome to KABU.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Jessica Tovar is an organizer for the Local Clean Energy Alliance of California. She grew up in East Los Angeles, worked for decades as an environmental justice organizer in a variety of urban, rural, indigenous communities throughout California and Arizona. More recently, she concentrated on climate justice and was an organizer for Communities for a Better Environment in Richmond, California, who are the folks who are so important and partly civilizing the Chevron Corporation. And now she's an organizer for quite a few years now for the Local Clean Energy Alliance of California. Jessica, things are changing with regard to energy really rapidly in California, and the people of Alameda County, Oakland, Berkeley, Richmond, Hayward, nearly all of the cities of the East Bay, its people will soon be getting their electricity not from PG&E, which was their former private utility, but from a county, a public agency. It's called East Bay Community Energy. And they're going to be contracting with sun and wind producers of many kinds, other clean energy too. And all those customers will pay less than they paid for electricity than before when they were PG&E customers. You and the Local Clean Energy Alliance of California worked hard to make that possible. That's, of course, not possible in Oregon because the legislatures and the city councils and most of the environmental movement has been dominated by the two private big utilities in Oregon. But tell us about California, local community energy. How did it come about in California? How did East Bay Community Energy come about?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I believe it's Assembly Bill 117 came about in 2002. So that was some time ago. It took a lot of organizing to get this policy for community choice energy off the ground. But even more so, it was difficult to get a project, an actual community choice program off the ground because it was very controversial. We were battling, you know, monopoly utility corporation, Pacific Gas and Electric, otherwise known as PG&E. And I believe the first community choice energy program got off the ground in 2010. So there was a good 8 years of struggle there. And of course, you know, once the first program launched, that too was attacked by the monopoly corporation. So here we are now in 2018 in Alameda County, and actually, you know, just getting our community choice program off the ground wasn't easy. Folks had been advocating since 2007 to try to get a community choice program in the East Bay area. And you know, the details are pretty much dealing with multi-billion dollar corporations. And that's a hard thing to do. But now, you know, fast forward to this year, we actually have a program called East Bay Community Energy. And so we're very proud that we were able to establish that. And this is pretty much opening the doors to the clean energy future that we want to see. So that's pretty much where we're at now.
Yeah, it's an incredible achievement when you consider the amount of effort that those big utilities put in to destroy you. In the beginning, through initiative after initiative, one of them, like $27 million was spent. You had $500,000 to fight them, and that's in the whole state of California, and you won. It was quite remarkable, and they're continuing to do it, continuing to try and get the legislation that will make it very, very difficult for you to operate, and you've won every one of those battles over the years. That's really, what an incredible record. You've been part of it. So, Jessica, tell us a little bit more about the details of East Bay Community Energy and the others.
With East Bay Community Energy, we're very proud that the program actually launched on June 1st of this year. The program started providing electricity to commercial and municipal customers in the Alameda County area. And fall of this year, it's going to roll out for residential customers. So we're very excited about that. So one thing to just make clear, though, is that these programs, when they start, they do buy energy off the market. And so what we've really been emphasizing on is actually when you pay your bill, the electrical portion of your bill goes to the local East Bay Community Energy Program. So what we're trying to do is, from the revenues of that money, is actually start investing in local clean energy build out. So that would be like local solar, local wind, and energy efficiency projects throughout Alameda County, so that we can start producing clean energy locally. And when it's in your community and you can see it and it employs your local community, it's real clean energy. And that's what we're working towards. That's pretty much the road to getting to a true 100% clean energy future.
Right. And do you have bonding authority? How do you, how would East Bay Community Energy build out on the local level and all local? What would be the sources of the capital? Could individual homeowners, for example, if they put, you know, they use their resources, the equity in their home, to put a solar panel system on top of their house, or maybe even a small wind thing if they're sort of rural, can they sell then? Are they going to be reimbursed for the energy that they put into the system from East Bay?
So one of the things that we've really been advocating for is that before this project gets to even fund new projects, your source of local clean energy is people who may already have rooftop solar, for example.
Right.
But offering incentives for them so that they can produce more, or folks that are thinking about solar can afford to do so, and they get incentives, be it, for example, they can make money, right, off of the excess that they sell back to the local program. And what's really good about this is that if you're a solar producer and the rest of your neighborhood is renters or owners that can't afford to put rooftop solar, they're benefiting from the excess solar that you're producing. So it's being used by your neighbors, pretty much. So, you know, I like to think of the local concept of food. If you apply that to energy, it makes sense, right? You're producing energy locally, you're employing local people, for example, and then you're consuming it locally. And so that makes it more affordable, because it's like not needing to be, you know, transmitted far away, like in, you know, the model of desert solars, right? You can equate that to like monoculture type of farming. It's not sustainable when you do it far away and you employ other people and then you have to transmit it in. It's more expensive, right? So this is a way where over time we're able to actually start weaning off buying energy off the market, remote energy, and over time increase, you know, our local renewable energy portfolio. And that is the way we need to go if we really want to fight climate change, bring climate justice to local communities, employ people, stimulate the local economy, and actually have affordable, stable rates for energy.
Right. And, of course, it's more resilient. If a couple towers are blown up, or they blow down, and or they get burned down in some huge fire or whatever it is,
yeah,
a whole city can be without electricity. Whereas local energy, there might even be a storm in that city. Well, first they have storage, and they have other cities around it because you're confederated. You're still on a grid, right? And furthermore, you can repair it yourself fairly easily. They're high-tech, but they're very easy to, you know, any good carpenter and an electrician can repair a solar energy system, or a wind turbine requires that some mechanic, very quickly after a storm, versus repairing a grid that's going over mountains and that has gotten either blown up or blown down. That's a huge undertaking. It seems to me that if you really want a reliable source of energy, you keep it local with storage.
Yep. And that's one of the other incentives that we're trying to advocate for, is actually offering incentives if people add storage to their solar system.
Mm-hmm.
Other incentives would be if they're providing, you know, energy in a low-income community, then they would get more of an incentive. We call these community benefit adders. So then another adder would be if you use prevailing wage, family sustaining wage, or union labor, then that's another added benefit for the person that is producing solar. So we're really pushing for this local development. And we're also pushing, one thing that's really unique about our program is we advocated to have a local development business plan study done, which has now recently been completed. So we're at a place where now we're advocating to implement this local development business plan. And what that is just a plan for how we're going to wean off of the market and start producing our own local clean energy. And that's something that we're really trying to galvanize, bring together different, you know, sectors of communities, like, you know, not just clean energy folks, not just environmental justice folks, but the housing sector, social justice, and other leaders in the community to really advocate for this, because if we win all these things, this will benefit all of us in the East Bay.
And I suppose transportation and the people who are concerned with fish in the bay, and the people who are concerned with birds and saving forests and stopping wildfires, all of them are going to benefit from a community, and even agricultural interests, right? They don't want huge grids crossing their land and all, and the enormous machines that are required. It seems to me that this could be really a local organizing project that would change the culture of the counties who do community choice aggregation, who have their own local energy.
Yep, definitely. There's a lot at stake. I think we've unfortunately gotten to see all the negative effects of our dependence on dirty energy. I think this is a good time for us to step up for clean energy and for that resilience that, you know, we need to build, because, you know, when it comes to climate catastrophe, we're in the thick of it, and it's devastating to our communities.
Yeah, and another little thing, like having clean air or having air without mercury pollution.
Exactly.
Minor little things like that. Yes, this is KABU Radio, Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Jessica Tovar, who has devoted a good part of her life to clean energy and to environmental justice. And now it must be for you, Jessica, really fulfilling to be part of now and a major organizer, among with there's many, many organizers and a very large number of local energy activists in California. There are energy activists in every county, right, who are moving towards this model of clean energy, is my sense.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been working in environmental justice for well over 10 years. I even lost count. But just seeing the impact on people's health and really seeing the problem getting bigger, you know, what we really need to do is really push for clean energy, because that's really what's going to put dirty energy out of business. And so I'm in the right place to be doing this work that's more solutions-based. So really emphasizing that not only are we fighting dirty energy, but we're also putting forth the solutions to that problem.
Tell us about the unions. There was a time when the PGE union and the other, the California Edison union, the electrical workers were completely opposed to local energy. They were afraid, as are the big utilities, that they would be out of jobs, and the utilities who are losing their customers all over California and are being forced to just become a distributing agency. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do the billing, and they do the repairing, but that's about all. And some of the repairing is going to be taken over by the locals. It seems to me the unions were opposed and, in fact, fought the local clean energy programs. That's changed, is my understanding. Nowadays, they're not campaigning for the opt-out. Explain all that.
Yeah, so one of the things to make clear is, yes, we do still get our bills from PG&E, because you have to understand, this is just the electrical portion of our bill. We're still paying the transmission costs. We're still using PG&E's infrastructure, right, because we don't yet own our own infrastructure for transmitting the electricity. But one of the things that's important to note is in our organizing, we actually have come to the table with these same electrical unions to pretty much hash out whatever we needed to do and come to an understanding that it is our in the best interest of our communities and for these unions to advocate for a local clean energy infrastructure, because that's where the local jobs piece would come. So in 2016, the labor unions, actually Alameda Labor Council, joined us in advocating to our decision makers to not only start a community choice program, but to make a strong commitment to this local build-out infrastructure for the jobs that it would create. So that actually was an unprecedented victory and a very hard organizing time, because, you know, there has been in past a lot of differences between, you know, the unions and the environmental movement, but we were able to come together. So fortunately, they're in support of, you know, local clean energy jobs being created in Alameda County. What they don't want to see is a community choice program that only buys energy off the market and then does nothing for the local sector. So that's something that we've been able to advocate for together. Unfortunately,
well, of course, on the market, you're buying jobs in your jobs are in North Dakota and New Mexico. North Dakota for wind and New Mexico and Arizona for solar. That's where the jobs are. After that, there are very few. So the unions, they did see now this is in the interest of their workers and their communities and their families.
Right. But we do see a lot of what happens is a lot of these dirty energy companies actually trying to sneak in language last minute into these legislative bills. And oftentimes that language is like what we call community choice energy killers. So we're constantly having to fight at the statewide level to maintain our local control and make sure that community choice is not being put out by these different legislative bills that we see several times at the 11th hour of the legislative time.
Yeah, they've got huge numbers of lobbyists and lawyers and a lot of politicians in their pockets. So they stick these things in right at the end, right when no one, and they're, it's all quite secretive, but you've managed to defeat them. Is my sense over time?
Yeah, it's either we defeat them or they get put on hold, and then, you know, they come back the next year. So right now we are fighting something, and actually what it is, it's called AB 813, and what that threatens to do is we would lose our local state California power, decision-making power, and it would open up the possibility for cheap renewables out in other states to now put our local emphasis and jobs out of business. So we kind of describe it as the NAFTA, the NAFTA of clean energy. And so that's something that we're fighting, but also those same electrical unions are fighting alongside with us, because their jobs, their local state jobs, are being threatened right now. So, you know, that would be a huge setback to California when we're trying really hard to produce our own local clean energy, and then, you know, we're going to be competing with this cheap stuff in other states. That makes no sense, because then we would also have to pay for the transmission.
Right.
So,
it's only cheap if you don't consider the transmission costs.
Right, exactly.
That's part of the game they play. They decided that when they build enough solar panels in paper over Arizona and New Mexico, somehow they can get the governments and the people through taxes to pay for their enormous grids and environment-destroying grids. But that doesn't stop them, because they want to make money. Jessica, it's been really great talking to you. Why don't you bring your message up to Oregon and convince the, I'll call a special legislative session.
Okay.
Now, they may not accept that, but I think if the Oregon National Guard and the U.S. Army enforces it, that's going to be a problem, too. But we're going to have a legislative session devoted to clean energy, and we're going to move towards what's called community choice aggregation in California and other states that have it successfully. And so you'll be one of the speakers, okay? So just stay ready to come to Oregon to point that out.
Yeah, that would be great. Can I leave you with some websites for the listeners to check out?
Sure.
Well, definitely check out localcleanenergy.org. That's who I work for. But then we also have a national effort with the Energy Democracy Project.
So oh, you're aligned with the Energy Democracy Project. That's great.
Oh, yeah. That's we helped found that group, too. It's energydemocracy.us is that website. So you can check out what we're doing, not only what we're doing here locally, but what other communities are doing throughout the United States to bring energy democracy to their communities.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, maybe you can say it again, what energy democracy does, it becomes a center point, the core of a environmental justice and environmental protection program in those local cities and counties and states, including transit and agriculture and all the rest. Is that summing up? Why don't you give a last pitch on a last discussion of that?
Sure. So the concept of democracy is very critical, especially at this point in time, right, in the United States. But energy democracy, what that's about is that if communities and people, regular ratepayers, come to the table and make decisions about our energy, our system would look very different than what it does now. So what we're really doing is engaging the community to propose their own solutions in the community about the type of energy they would like to see used in their community. So that's exercising your energy democracy, actually making decisions that are best for our community as opposed to profits like these corporations have done in our communities.
Jessica Tovar, great to talk to you. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work.
All right. Clean power to the people.
Excellent.
All right.
Can you call on your imagination as if telling a myth to a child? Put in the fantastical, wonderful, magical, add the romantic, the brave and the wild. Once upon a time there was a power so great that no one could know its name. People tried to claim it and rule with it, always such arrogance and it in shame. Thousands of years would pass in a moment, hundreds of cultures would come and go, each generation with a glorious calling, even when they were too busy to know. And then one day, after two millennia, which after all was a small part of time, hundreds of souls found their way out of nowhere to be on Earth at the threat of decline.